Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Power Up and Game. I'm your host, Michael, and joining me, as always, is my main man, Taylor. Taylor, how you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm doing fantastic. This is a special episode for us, and one that might be controversial.
And why is that, exactly?
You want to go ahead and get into our show, our intro here?
Yeah, sure. Okay, let's go ahead and get into that. On a personal note, we've had a hectic few weeks, and that is saying a lot for us. I recently took a week off to visit some family, and Taylor is about to do the same. So we're recording two episodes back-to-back to make sure we have content to post while Taylor's away. Taylor, anyone listening can tell what this episode is going to be about, but why don't you give us a little context as to why you picked this topic for today?
Don't mind if I do, man. On this episode and the next episode, we are going to be sharing our top 20 favorite video games of all time. I wanted to go with a fun, laid-back topic for the next two episodes, and I'm actually taking this from Nerds Talk Movies. Over on that podcast, Tristan Benz, Drew Garrison, and myself have each shared our favorite movies of all time. And it was a really fun time, and it was actually pretty difficult to put that list together. And spoilers, it was difficult to put together this list too, because, well, there have been a ton of awesome video games, and limiting my favorite games to just 20 was a process, to say the least. This is going to be part one. Michael, are you ready?
I am ready, and I'm so glad I talked you down from doing 25.
Yeah, man, okay, so lie, full transparency, this was going to be a top 25, but Michael was struggling. He was struggling.
I was.
Because the thing is, what you were telling me is, like, you were sitting there going, like, no, I need to put this on. No, this needs to be here. So that last five for you, you were really struggling with. So we're limited to 20. I do have a 25, so I'll have five honorable mentions. I don't know if you have any honorable mentions.
I might have a couple that's, like, underrated, but I wouldn't be like, oh, man, it's just, like, one of my favorites. Specifically one of mine, you should go check them out kind of thing. So we'll talk about that some other time. So let's go ahead and get right into it. And this might be controversial. We're going to start off already. Resident Evil 4. I know a lot of people probably put this. Yeah, I know. I know a lot of people probably put this, like, in their top 10, even 15. But for me, it really was in my top 25 list. But thankfully, we're able to kind of skim that down by five. So I can easily say Resident Evil 4 did it for me, because it really changed up the landscape of Resident Evil. Now, I was never a big Resident Evil fan. I liked the franchise. Don't get me wrong. I played the original like everybody else. You know, I never really cared for the tank controls and the camera that moved on its own and just switched whenever it felt like it when you got to a certain point. I always found that to be jarring, even as a kid. I never liked it. And then Resident Evil 4 came along and completely flipped the script and made it to where I still got that cool, scary Resident Evil. But now my uncoordinated ass was actually able to play it, because it went with this new over-the-shoulder third-person action. And for me, that was something that I was like, oh my goodness, this is revolutionary in the world of Resident Evil. So I was like, I'm gonna check this out. I played it back on the original GameCube, and man, I had a blast with that game. I never finished it, mind you, but I had a blast with that game, and I really should play the remake, because I heard how good it was. Even though they did add in using the knife to block so many to parry so many attacks, I was kind of like, that's weird, but whatever. It's Resident Evil. There's been much, much weirder. But for me, Resident Evil 4, it had the atmosphere. It had funny writing. Leon was an awesome character. It was far more focused, I felt. The story was still a little wonky, don't get me wrong. It's Resident Evil, so it was still campy, and I love that. I'm glad it never lost its way until it reached 6. But, you know, that's for top 20 disappointing games that we can do some other time. So we can do that somewhere else.
I think that's easier, by the way. Top 20 disappointing. I mean, that list would be so much easier than us trying to figure out, like, our top 20 favorite.
Yeah. That definitely could have been an April Fool's Yeah, there we go. That could have been an April Fool's kind of podcast if I was here. But yeah, Resident Evil 4 was just that lightning in a bottle that you didn't see coming. That when you saw the previews looked cool, but it wasn't until you actually got to play it yourself to where you realized just how good this camera system and the gameplay really was.
Go ahead and go with your 19 and 18 as well. Let's go three at a time until we get to number 11.
Okay, yeah, that works for me. Another one for me, Brothers in Arms. Now, Taylor said I can do franchises, so I'm going to go with Road to Hill 30. For anybody who doesn't know what Brothers in Arms is, it was a game back on the original Xbox and the PlayStation 2. It was developed by Gearbox, published by Ubisoft. And it's back when Ubisoft actually cared about making cool games and pushing out cool games. Brothers in Arms was not your typical Call of Duty game. It gave you a chance to play the actual leader of a squad to where it's first person, but you were also giving out commands. If you needed somebody to launch a rocket at a tank, you can have your grenadier put up a position behind cover, aim at the tank, and tell them to hit it at a specific spot. Or you could tell your team, hey, we're going all in. Everybody just rush the enemy. And you could also tell them, hey, get into cover. Go here, go there. I want you behind this bush. I want you behind this mud pit. I want you behind this tractor. It was just such a cool experience that for me was just, this was my battlefield. You know, like I liked Call of Duty. Don't get me wrong. I loved Call of Duty too. But Brothers in Arms was that break, that fresh break that I needed and wanted from the franchise that was Call of Duty at the time, because I was playing a lot of Call of Duty and Brothers in Arms was just that shot, no pun intended, was a shot in the arm that was like, oh my goodness, there is more than just Call of Duty. There is something awesome out there. So Ubisoft, Gearbox, whoever owns the rights to this game, because now that Take-Two owns Gearbox, it could happen. We want another Brothers in Arms. That was one of my favorites. So Brothers in Arms, Road to Hill 30. If you're one of those people who like to go out and collect video games, look for this title. You won't regret it. It is such a great franchise. But Road to Hill 30 is definitely one of my favorites. Now, at number 18, and this one might actually catch you off guard a bit, Taylor, but it's actually a Naruto game. And surprise, surprise, it was made by Ubisoft. It's called Naruto Rise of a Ninja. It was a game based on the Naruto franchise, and it released only on the Xbox 360, which I was surprised even happened in the first place, because at the time, all the anime games were going to the PlayStation 2. All right, the PlayStation was the place to go for your anime fixture. The PlayStation 3, less so, but it was still there to where if you wanted to release an anime game, whether it's fighting, shooting, dating sim, you sent it to PlayStation. So the point that Ubisoft not only got the rights to make a Naruto game, but they published it exclusively on the 360 for reasons I don't know, was something completely different to me. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to check it out. It was a semi-open world Naruto game that was also part arena battle, to where it was 1v1 kind of battles. And they put in a bunch of your favorite characters from the earlier anime. I think like season 1 through 3 or something like that. I forget. But it retells the story from the very beginning of Naruto's tale, from the swing set to him wanting to become Hokage. There was a sequel, but it wasn't as awesome. But what made Rise of a Ninja so cool to me was you could actually use the control sticks to make the ninja signs to do moves, which was really cool to me, because it wasn't just a button masher. It was kind of strategic to where you had to get your opponent knocked away far enough for you to throw up your signs. That sounds so gangster, but to do your ninja signs, to do your special ability. And it just felt completely new. It felt right. It was just something I was like, man, I want more games like this now. I do want anime games to where they let you control how the special ability works. Because if you were slow with the hand movements, that gave your opponent time to recover. But if you were quick because you knew the combinations, you were able to throw out special moves like nobody's business. And I really love that about the game.
I want to talk about Resident Evil 4 for a second before we get into my 20 through 18.
Okay.
Dude, I agree with you. Resident Evil 4 is not on my list. But
I'm surprised.
It was close. Like, it wasn't even my top 25, but it was close to being that 25. Oh. Because you're right. For what it did to the franchise, it changed it completely. And granted, it got a little tiresome towards the end. Like you were talking about, Resident Evil 6. That's where it got pretty tiresome, that style. Yeah. But at the time, it was major. Like, yeah, I know all the QTE stuff, and that's also annoying. But the third person yeah. over the camera, a more action-focused, man, it was not, I don't want to say revolutionary, but to the franchise, it was evolutionary. That's the best way to put it.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
There's something to be said, too, that when they remade Resident Evil 2 and 3, what style was it in? You know? It yeah. wasn't remade in yeah. the classic tank controls. It was remade in Resident Evil 4 style, essentially. So, yeah, I will fully endorse that pick 100%. I can't say too much about Brothers in Arms or Naruto. So, I'm going to go ahead and just name off my honorable mentions and then get into my 20 through 18. So, five honorable mentions. This is my 25 to 21. Mario Kart 64. Dead Rising. Castle Crashers. Fallout New Vegas. And what barely missed the official top 20 list for me. Halo 3.
Yikes. Well, man, those are some good picks. And I feel bad that I couldn't finish getting five more.
Well, here's where it's going to get controversial. You've created a controversy here, and I did not intend for this to feel like a hot take, because this was, for the list that I made here, it was intended to be top 25. But by the way that we're doing this episode, Halo 3 is missing the list, and my number 20 is making it. My number 20 favorite game of all time, despite all of its flaws. This.
Okay.
I still love it. And it's Mass Effect 3.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I can forgive that. Nah, I'm waiting on the rest of the list to hear that, but yeah, go ahead. I can see that.
Now, Mass Effect 3, as I said, has some flaws. Its ending is a huge one. It is the elephant in the room to talk about. Everybody goes, the ending is so bad, it's one of the worst endings of all time for video games. That said, and I know they've semi-tried to repair it, and I think they kind of have. At least the best that they could have, considering the original release. That being said, that game was so good. You finally being in this war, and you have to rile the troops. You have to get all these different forces, all these different races and species together and get them to fight together against the Reapers. There's something just so freaking epic about that. And you being that peacekeeper that's got to do it, you being in the war, like the mission where you're on the moon of Palavin, and I don't want to get too much into it because I'm trying not to talk spoilers here, but that just feels like you're in the middle of a war. There's something about those missions there. There's something about the stakes of the game story, to where characters can die. And that's something Mass Effect 2 was so good at. I think it was even better than Mass Effect 3's. But still, I think the stakes of the story were there. It was present in Mass Effect 3. I think the missions were fantastic in Mass Effect 3. And I think about the... I forgot what it's called. Is it the Citadel? I think it's the Citadel. The Citadel mission?
The main hub, yeah.
Yeah. It's been so long since I played Mass Effect, and that needs to change, because I need to go back through this trilogy again. The Citadel DLC is one of the most fun missions I've ever played in a video game, because you can tell everybody involved got to go crazy with it. Like, it was the last hurrah for this trilogy. Mass Effect 3, fantastic game. I could just keep gushing about it, to be honest with you, other than its ending. Number 19, Portal 2. One of the funniest games of all time.
Okay, so Taylor, I have a confession to make.
Never played Portal 2.
No, because I didn't care for Portal 1.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was fun, don't get me wrong, but I don't know why, but the Portal franchise, well, I guess not a franchise, it's just two games, but Portal just, I didn't care for it. So I'm interested in seeing why 2 it was your favorite over 1.
I think everything just got amplified. The comedy of it, the villain being Wheatley. That is kind of a spoiler, but it's 20% through the game, it feels like, so it's not that huge of a spoiler to me. And Wheatley just being this villain to where you're like, really? This guy? He's the guy I had to go against? It's how they made this puzzle franchise so iconic is beyond me. But they have. Like, Portal 2 is one of the best games of all time. The puzzles are fantastic. The voice acting is spectacular. The comedy is on point. GLaDOS is a show stealer, like she was in the first one. Portal 2, I think, definitely deserves to be on my list here. And number 18, another semi-controversial pick. Again, did not attend for this. Batman Arkham Knight.
Wow. Oh, what?
I know the Batmobile is overdone, and the antagonists, the boss battles, they were not great. But the story of Arkham Knight is absolutely a masterclass in Batman storytelling. Like, it is exactly what I want from a Batman story. The Arkham Knight, not the huge, huge mystery that Rocksteady intended it to be. A lot of people guessed who Arkham Knight was, but still, I think it was a great story that concluded the Arkham franchise, which never came back in any kind of way, right? Any thoughts on my 20 through 18?
Mass Effect, I can see that. You know, that's a franchise that honestly is not, I don't even know if it's on my list. If I had a 25, it would have been on my list, but it's not even on my list because the ending not only failed me and everybody else, but again, I was going with franchises and Andromeda would have unfortunately dropped it. So I know it's terrible, but Andromeda was just that bad for me. So I can see that. Portal, I don't see it personally. But I wouldn't put it in my disappointing games either. Like, it was a fun game. So I could see people liking it, but it just wasn't for me. Arkham Knight, Arkham Knight was Arkham Knight. It was just a game that everybody loved. So I can see that being on plenty of people's top list.
Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I think in terms of gameplay, and like if we're talking best, Arkham Knight's below Arkham City and probably Arkham Asylum.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. They definitely got the hang of everything with that one because the combat was just so smooth.
Oh, no, the combat. No. Hold on. I feel like you misheard me. I think in terms of the game itself, like, if we're talking best quality, Arkham City and Arkham Asylum is probably better than Knight.
Really?
Now, I will say combat-wise, we're talking the smoothness of, you know, the fluidity of the combat. You're right. Like, Knight perfected that. But it's the stuff like the Batmobile and the Riddler challenges that this time had already gotten way too repetitive.
Yeah.
The boss battle's not hitting like that. Like, all that stuff just combined for a, I don't want to say lackluster, but just like, yeah, it was really good. Where Arkham Knight makes my list in terms of being my favorite is with the story. That's where I wanted to come from here. It's like, in terms of gameplay and everything else, I probably prefer City out of all of them. Maybe even Origins. But Knight had the story. And it had that conclusion that I was really looking for out of the franchise. So that's why I made my list.
Okay. While I do agree that the Riddler stuff got kind of wonky at that point. I do like that the Batmobile was in there, and I kind of wish they did more with it, but it felt like they did it out of obligation because the fans kept wanting it.
In terms of more with it, are you saying more variety? Because they have nothing but Batmobile shit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I wish they did more with it. Like, more than just, oh, it's just another way to transport and shoot AI tanks that barely pose a threat to you.
Yeah, the tank battles were... the tank battles, especially the Deathstroke one, that's the one... that's the glaring, like, hey, this is where you fucked up with a boss battle. Especially after Origins and that amazing Deathstroke fight, that's where it messed up.
I gotta go back. I gotta play Origins, man.
It's a really good game. It was either this or Knight was, or it was either Origins or Knight was gonna make my top 25 favorite. Like, they were neck and neck for me. Again, the reason why Knight makes it to me is just because of the story of it. I don't want to get into it because again, I don't want to go into spoilers, but. The way that story concludes and you have that epic Batman, like Kevin Conroy, Mark Hamill, freaking bring it in that game, man.
They brought it with all three. Man, they put out their A+ game with those.
So what are your, where are we at? 17 through 15.
Now, I feel like this game was underrated. Taylor, I actually talked about this once before. On the podcast, anytime I get a chance to talk about this hidden gem, this forgotten gem, this broken, messy, buggy piece of crap that I will admit is all those things. Advent Rising, which is ADVENTRISING. Now, it was made by a company called Glyphix. I don't even know if they're still in business, to be honest. And it was published by Majesco. This was back when Majesco was throwing out anything they can to try to make something stick to create a franchise or to keep themselves afloat because they were going through some financial troubles. And Advent Rising was going to be their franchise maker. A lot of people called it the next Halo. It was unfair, to be honest. But it was a story that was written by Orson Scott Card. Who was a sci-fi author. So right off the bat, they were already going full blown with the budget. They already wanted to make this a big epic. The music was done by Tommy Tallarico. And the music alone, chef's kiss. Oh my goodness, Taylor, if you ever get a chance, if you have a streaming service that you use, Spotify, Apple Music, whatever, look up the Advent Rising soundtrack. Absolutely gorgeous. Oh, one of the best soundtracks in video games that I feel more people should give credit to. But the game takes place in the future in space. Humans have found a way to not only leave Earth, but to travel to distant planets. And we are seen as gods to these unknown species of aliens because through another part of the galaxy, we have these abilities to manipulate things. People call it the Force, which, yeah, let's face it, that's what it was. You get to push things, levitate things, and throw them around. And, you know, you were seen as an advent, which is where the name comes from. There was plans for this game to be a PSP game. There was ideas for movies, comic books, but unfortunately, it didn't really play out because the game didn't sell well, so everything ended up getting canceled out. But the main gimmick for this game, other than Tommy Tallarico and Orson Scott Card being part of the big part of the game, the story and the music, was that they had a $1 million contest, which honestly is the reason I picked it up. I wasn't going to win anything, but I thought it looked cool. And hey, who knows? Maybe I could. And a lot of people found a way to cheat the contest, so they ended up canceling the contest, which sucks. But the biggest gimmick was the dual wielding of weapons. Unlike other games where you were able to do that, they wanted a flick kind of control to where you can flick the stick and one weapon would aim at one enemy while the other weapon would automatically aim at a different. And the player would be able to just run around flicking this controller, aiming at two or three characters at once. And it was janky as all get-go. I will admit that. It is a janky game. It's one of my guilty pleasures. because, man, this game is broken, Taylor. I can't tell you how many times this game has frozen or even crashed on me. It's back on the original Xbox and PlayStation 2, and I believe even the PC. This game breaks. AI is buggy. They get stuck in things. You get stuck in things. There were times where the game tried to save and it crashed. It tried to save and it froze, and you had to start entire sections over again. And usually that's so frustrating. But Avid Rising is just so good that it makes me wish that it would release today to where they could release those patches and they could fix it. Because, man, it was ahead of its time. And I really wish people give it a second chance. So if you're a collector, Avid Rising, go out, find it. It's worth your time. It is so good. Now, as for number 16, it's another game that I felt was underrated. Remember Me. If anybody remember that game, it was from Don't Nod, and it was published by Capcom. It only got one game, and you can tell that they had ideas to make a bigger franchise out of it. Maybe two or three games. Oh, man. Taylor, have you ever heard of this game, Remember Me?
I remember it. But it is recognizable, but I don't fully remember it. Pun intended, I guess.
Yeah, it's the ironic part of this game is that you remember it, but you don't. Because Capcom did try to make a big deal out of it. And the gimmick for this game was that you were able to take different memories, like movesets, and mix them up together to where you can create your own combo system in combat. And it was a pretty cool idea. And if they were able to do a second or third game, I can totally see them taking that premise and doing so much more with it to where it's more than just a combat, to where you probably could change up the story. You were able to mess with certain characters' memories to change things up. And it's just one of those games to where I was like, man, it's one of those creativity risks. You know, it's either going to be a hit and miss. It's not going to be in between. It's either going to be a big success or a big flop.
It's definitely a don't nod title.
Like, oh, absolutely.
When you said what the game was, I immediately thought it was Don't Nod. That made
yeah.
it. Because of the... It just is that kind of name where you're like, oh, okay, I know who made this game.
Yeah, the whole questioning of humanity and who you are as a person. Yeah, they're really good at that. And honestly, I wish Capcom would give them a second crack. They're doing remakes. All right, remake Remember Me. All right, let's give it another chance. Give it that Mirror's Edge Catalyst kind of treatment to where you can do a reboot, to where you redo the first one, but slightly different, but be better than Catalyst, because Catalyst was bad. All right, I'm going way, way back to the original Xbox again for my number 15. A fun fun game called Project Gotham Racing. And no, this doesn't take place in the DC universe. You're not going to see Batman. But what you are going to get are some really cool cars and really fun gameplay. It was made by, I can't see their names. I forget the company that made them. And that sucks because they deserve all the kudos. But it was published by Microsoft. When they were just called Microsoft. Before they were called Microsoft Game Studio and the Xbox Game Studio. It's back on the original Xbox. It was a game that was arcadey, but not too arcadey. It wasn't Need for Speed arcadey. The cars felt like they had some weight to them, but everything was about style. It was like, yeah, you can win the race, but it's also about making cool points and making stylish points called kudos. And, you know, you use those kudos to not only, you know, go further into the career by winning races and getting kudos, but also buying new stuff, you know, for the car and unlocking new cars. And it's just such a fun, easygoing game. And I think that's one thing I loved about it. I'm not a huge racing guy. I love racing games, don't get me wrong, but I'm not good at it. I like Need for Speed Underground. I liked Need for Speed Hot Pursuit. But those games, they were really arcadey to where you can get away with just crashing into something and keep on driving. Project Gotham Racing, it was before Forza. And it was at the time where Microsoft had both of these franchises. They had Project Gotham Racing, they had Forza, and they elected to go with the realistic Forza instead. And I really wish Microsoft would bring back Project Gotham Racing, because this was such a fun, easygoing game that if you don't like driving games because you're not good at it, I think you like Project Gotham Racing because it's just, it's easygoing. It's just relaxing.
What I like about your batch of games here is you started off your top 20 with a bona fide classic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a good, like, okay, we're going to start off with a bona fide classic of Resident Evil 4. And Brothers in Arms, I think, is one of those games that is very well received in that kind of shooter market.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
those first two especially, it feels like you started off with, like, all right, let's get some bona fide, well-known quality games out there. And then the rest of your list has been like, okay, I can speak to the game's quality, but here's why it's my favorite. And that's why I was really excited to do this episode and our next episode, because it's stuff like this, hearing why you love these games and what made it so great, other than not just your personal story, but what gameplay mechanics, what story mechanics, you know, what visually, what did it bring to the table that made you remember it all the years later? So
yeah,
that's the main thing I could really say about this next batch of games you had here, 17 through 15. It just, again, it shows to me, like, this is the reason why we ended up doing this topic. It's just a, you know, had those fun personal stories, and hopefully anybody listening, genuinely, I do want to hear what your top 10, your top 15, top 20, like, let us know what your favorite games are. I love to hear stories like this. So,
they're fun. They're just, it's great to remind you that games used to be so much more than just grindfest.
Not just that, but also another reason, other than us being unavailable for the next few weeks, is also just because you get caught up in gaming news, and I'm not saying like it's all bad all the time, but it's just you get so caught up in gaming news and releases and all these good and bad things happening in the industry that sometimes you gotta just sometimes take a step back and be like, let's just have some fun here. Let's talk about some video games. And that's what the next 2 weeks are going to be for us. And speaking of video games here, here is one hell of a title that is my number 17. God of War 2018.
Oh, wow.
This game is fucking awesome.
It is amazing.
Everything I was talking about, like, oh yeah, Mass Effect 3, the stakes of it is epic. God of War 2018, the entire game is just epic. That's exactly what it is. It is just one epic adventure that, at the end of the day, is about a father taking a trip with his son so he could spread his wife's ashes at the top of a mountaintop. It's such a personal story that is in this backdrop of this Norse mythology. And the main character is from the Greek mythology. It's just this weird blend, and it works so well. Like, this game is awesome in the story department, in the visual department. Santa Monica Studios, good God. You guys absolutely crush it. This is one of the, quality-wise, this is one of the best games of all time. I think this hits top 10, maybe top 5 best games of all time. I really do. In terms of favorite, there's some games that nostalgically are in my brain that I cannot get rid of that are above it. But quality-wise, this is top 5, top 10. Easy. Its story's great. Its gameplay is great. Being able to switch from the Leviathan axe to the... what are they called? I never played the original trilogy. That's the funny part about it, too. I love this game so much. I never played the original trilogy. So usual weapons...
With his usual, it's called the Blades of Chaos.
Blades of Chaos, thank you. And even that moment, by the way, which I didn't fully have the context of, because while I knew he had those weapons, because, you know, I've seen God of War before in trailers and gameplay and whatnot, I've just never played it. Even with not knowing the full context, that moment where he gets the Blades of Chaos.
Oh, that build-up was so good. Because I was like, man, what happened to the Blades of Chaos? Where are they?
I like how I said I wasn't spoiling anything, but I'm over here trying to, oh man, this moment here. But
I mean, it's just one of those things to where, yeah, it's that build-up. And it is one of the reasons why you love it. And for you to be like, oh, I never played the original trilogy, but for you to still feel...
Yes, exactly.
How the gravity... of him getting those blades back, just goes to show you how well told that story is.
It's the music, it's the voice acting, it's the writing, it's the visuals, it's all put together in this story. You know, like Jack Black said a few weeks ago in an interview, we talked about it on the show, Drew Garrison and I, because you were visiting family at the time. Like, Jack Black was talking about, like, movies or video games are becoming more like movies anyway. Some are already there. God of War is a perfect example of that. And I'm not saying they shouldn't make a God of War movie or TV show. They are making a God of War TV show. Isn't that the prime thing? I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and it is to show that if they do make the live action, when they release it, you can kind of see how it can actually work. Because if you go by the original trilogy.
That's what
I'm saying.
That's exactly what I was going to.
Yeah, if you go by the original trilogy, you're like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. Maybe if you did an animated version, then yeah, it would work. But live action, absolutely not. But looking at the rebooted franchise continuation, absolutely.
Now, for my number 16, this is going to be another, I don't want to say controversial, but I'm kind of cheating here. Because it's technically two games. But I want to bring it to you to see if this can count as one pick. I picked Resident Evil 2 / the Resident Evil 2 remake. Will you accept both of those?
Interesting. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. I can see them both being like, oh man, because you did like the original and the remake brought something new, but also reminded you of why you liked the original in the first place. Yeah.
At the end of the day, like, it's the soul of Resident Evil 2. The remake, anyways. Like, it's the soul of what the OG Resident Evil 2 was. Like, they're essentially the same game. But when it comes to gameplay, when it comes to visuals, the remake's just better. There's no way around it. Like, it is just better in every other way.
And that's something you should say, in my opinion. If you're going to do a remake, do it right. But yeah, you should definitely be like, oh yeah, the remake adds on to or even brings the original that I already love to modern games, the good side of it, and made it fun, or maybe you fall in love with it all over again.
Yeah, that's exactly what Resident Evil 2 is, the remake. It just makes you fall in love with the game again. You said the campy story, that it's what Resident Evil is, man. It just, it's baked into the core of the franchise, and Resident Evil 2, it exudes that, you know? While having two badass protagonists with Leon Kennedy and Claire Redfield.
Fucking Leon all over again. I swear Leon carries the franchise now.
Yeah, I would say Leon's probably my favorite, I would say, out of the protagonists. I think it's Leon and Claire, and I think it's for this reason, because of this game.
I would actually say Leon Ada.
Ada's really good. Yeah, I agree. I really like Ada's character. Last pick, I'm continuing the zombie theme here with my number 15, Left 4 Dead.
Oh, I was wrong. All right, go ahead. Oh, dang. I thought I predicted it, but I was wrong.
What did you think I was going to go with?
I thought you were going to go with Dead Rising 2.
Ah, no, Dead Rising 2 would not make my list. Oh, I like Dead Rising 2.
I'm out. Yeah.
But Dead Rising 1 was, in terms of the, again, this is the top 20 favorite games. Quality-wise, 2 is better. In terms of the setting and the nostalgia of it, 1 is just special. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think you can say the same thing about Left 4 Dead. I think quality-wise, 2 is better. But the settings of 1 and just the special nature of when the first one came out, and specifically for me here, I was in middle school when Left 4 Dead 1 came out, and being able to play that game with friends and just this fun time where we're running through the map and one of our friends gets like taken out by a tank and we're having to leave them behind. And then another friend is getting swarmed by zombies and we close the door behind them to try to screw them over. Like, it's just dumb fun. That's what it is. Like, Left 4 Dead is one of the best dumb fun games to ever release. Easily one of the best zombie games to ever release.
Okay. Yeah, that actually sounds pretty cool. It kind of makes me want to play it.
All right. For our 14 through 11, our last batch, let's just go with the last four here, and let's wrap up our first part. Our first, I guess, yeah, our first part of a two-part episode.
Alrighty then. So tell me, Taylor, have you ever seen a John Woo movie called Hard Boiled?
I haven't. But I think I know where you're going with this.
Yes.
Because I have played... You know what? Well, I'm not going to spoil it, potentially. What's your next game?
Well, my next game is called John Woo Presents Stranglehold.
I have played this.
Man, it's such an awesome game.
It's absolutely... Okay, look. I don't mean to steal your thunder. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Stranglehold, it's a John Woo movie put into video game form for better or worse.
Definitely for better for me. Because this was definitely one of those things. Like, I've seen John Woo movies. I think they're awesome. John Woo also has an eye for action. The game, Stranglehold, was done by Tiger Hill Entertainment, which I believe was Vin Diesel's company, and published by Midway when they were going through a whole bunch of troubles too. Now, what makes Stranglehold so interesting is that it's actually technically the sequel to Hardboiled. It's a continuation of that because it does bring back Chow Yun-Fat as Agent Tequila, which that name alone is just so awesome. It shows you it's definitely a product of its time, but it still holds up now. And as Taylor said, it's definitely one of those games, for better or for worse, because you do get all the John Woo-ness in there, which means doves everywhere. They make a whole system to where you can slow down and do this Max Payne 360 kill spin with doves in the background. You can dive onto a tray and slide across the floor, shooting at enemies. And it's all about style.
Well, when I say for better or for worse, at the end of the day, you know what you're getting into with this game. So,
I can't really
fault the game for it, because the game's not pretending to be something else. And then midway through it, you're like, I think this is a John Woo game. Like, no, you know immediately what this is. So if you're a fan of John Woo movies, you might want to check this game out. I haven't played it in a long, long time. Honestly, I don't even remember if I actually played the game or if it was the demo that I constantly just replayed, because the gameplay itself was really fun.
Oh, it was so good. Yeah, I even got the collector's edition back when that was a thing that was actually worth you spending the extra bit of $10, $20 on. Chow Yun-Fat returns. They use his likeness. They use his voice. He comes back to voice Agent Tequila. The slow motion, they call it Tequila Time, which, man, that's drunken goggles, but okay. It was just such in-your-face, unapologetic, blow everything up, shoot everything up kind of game. The story isn't that good. In fact, I don't even remember the story. It's just an excuse to go around different places and shoot stuff up. It was such a good-looking game. Oh my goodness, it was such a beautiful looking game. And it was just fun to play. Swinging on chandeliers, shooting at enemies, holding two different weapons, just going full-blown John Woo. I want John Woo to make more video games. Have John Woo be a part of more video games, because, oh my goodness, I wanted a sequel to Stranglehold for so long because it was just so fun to play. And it definitely makes my top 25, not my top 10, but it definitely makes my 25 games that, yeah, go out, find it, play it. You won't regret it. Like, even Taylor told you, the demo alone was addictive. This game has some replayability to it.
It was. I don't remember if I even played the game. It's just I at least remember playing the demo over and over.
Oh, I played the hell out of the demo. So yeah, I know. I agree with you. I played the demo and then I went out and got the game because the demo was just that fun.
I will say, I remember John Wick being talked about, like, oh, they need to make a John Wick game. And then, yeah, there have been John Wick Hex, I think, is the one they made, the VR thing.
Yeah. But
we haven't gotten the full-on John Wick game that I think everybody was expecting. I'm not saying just make John Wick, but Stranglehold. But I'm saying look at Stranglehold as, like, a basis for, like, hey, here's kind of what we need to go for. And build from there.
Yeah. Yeah, man, if anybody who's making a John Wick game is listening, yeah, seriously, look at John Woo Presents Stranglehold. It was such an awesome
You don't
want
to copy it, because a John Woo movie and a John Wick movie are, I don't want to say vastly different, but they're different. You know what I mean?
I would say they're vastly different, because John Woo's a straight-up action flick, with John Wick being more of a gun-fu kind of action flick. So you would definitely have to put some melee combat into a John Wick game if you're going to do something like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't say just take Stranglehold and make it John Wick. No, I'm just saying, look at Stranglehold and be like, all right, that's what we're going to build off of and make our own thing.
Yeah. All right, for my next pick at number 13. All right, now this is a forgotten game. It was underappreciated. I'm going way back to the original Xbox again, Taylor. So many of my games came back from my childhood, because I'm sorry, modern day games do not hold a candle to the Xbox, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 360 era.
Hey, this is the place for your nostalgia goggles, all right?
It is.
This is the episode. This week and next week's episodes, this is where you could pull the back in my day card.
But I'm not just saying back in my day. We're actually proving why. We're not saying it's better. We're just saying why you should, you know, go back, check it out. So it's not just back in my day, we didn't have DLC and rah. No, it's that, hey, these games tried different things. They actually were creative. But back on the original Xbox, back when Microsoft was really trying to put their foot into the video game industry, where they were trying all kinds of cool stuff. They were trying out different franchises, different genres, trying out new IPs. Back when they were actually being creative, they worked with a company called Climax, and they created a really cool, really underappreciated hidden gem RPG called Sudeki. Sudeki. It was one of those games that came out of nowhere. Like, they really tried to advertise it. They were trying to make it seem like it's going to be the next big RPG. It's the reason that you want RPGs on the Xbox. And honestly, if more people supported these kind of games like Sudeki, I think it would have done much better. It was no Fable. It felt different from Fable. You played four different characters. So Sudeki was one of those RPGs that I felt would have made it much bigger on the Xbox platform. If more people were open to more than just Halo, because Halo really did take over. And it was back in the time where Maxim, the magazine, was rating video games, and they give it a 5 out of 5 stars. It's a single player game. You control all four players, but not at the beginning. They actually build up on this epic story where you're the princess and you start figuring out that there's something going on in the world. And there's this darkness that's just starting to consume everything. And it was just, oh my goodness. It's one of those games where it's kind of hard to explain, because it does have, I will admit, outdated mechanics. I tried playing it again a year or so ago. And man, I was like, oh my goodness, if this was made in modern times, the combat would feel smoother, it would feel snappier, switch between characters would feel more organic. But again, this is back when they were actually trying out new stuff. They were trying to be creative with everything. Not everybody wants to be Final Fantasy. There were people who didn't want to be Fable. You know, they were trying out different kind of things. And Sudeki, unfortunately, kind of fell to the wayside, because people on the Xbox at that time really didn't care for RPGs. So you weren't seeing like Final Fantasy on there. You weren't seeing Final Fantasy Online like you were seeing on the PlayStation 2. So unfortunately, they tried, but it didn't work out. I don't know who owns the rights to Sudeki. I will assume it's Microsoft. But Phil, if you're there, I would like for you to bring back some of these old games.
Phil, if you're there. what's your number 12?
For me, for number 12, and man, Taylor, you know, you had it right with God of War. It's definitely up there. But for me, God of War 3 is going to be next on my list, because they nailed finishing Kratos' original story. I didn't think they were going to outdo God of War 2, because God of War 2 was absolutely amazing. But the move from God of War 2 to 3, next level. They went all out with the power of the PlayStation 3. They made things bigger. They made the hits harder. They made the combat faster somehow. They brought in a bunch of interesting weapons, such as Hercules gauntlets, and being able to go up against Zeus himself. It felt like an epic finale, to where if they ended at God of War 3, I'd have been completely fine. Like, it was the stamp of approval for endings. Like, it ended the way I think your Kratos story should have. And you know what? It's just one of those games to where you're like, God, I love the new God of Wars. But man, I really want Taylor to go back and play the original trilogy. Especially since they do have a re-release. It's not a remake, but it's an updated re-release of the original trilogy on PlayStation 4. Man, Taylor, I highly recommend going back, checking those trilogies out. Now, they're not going to carry the same story weight as God of War and God of War Ragnarok, but it's definitely worth seeing, like, oh man, this is how far God of War has come. And it is absolutely mind-blowing to see this story go from angry demigod to sad, I want to be a better father, but I know I'm not good at being a father story. And it's just so amazing.
I know that Kratos is more of a dick.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He is an absolute.
He's not
asshole.
A ray of sunshine in the new duology, but you know, you kind of get it in God of War 2018 and Ragnarok. In the trilogy, I have both heard and seen through like cutscenes. Yeah, it's a bit of a dick. So I might go back and play through the original trilogy.
In God of War 1, early in God of War 1, you save this guy from being swallowed by a monster, and you're just like, oh, you saved me. He's like, no, I just want your key. Rip the key off of his neck and then toss him into the monster anyway. Like, bro, that was unnecessary. You could just toss him to the side. Like, you didn't have to kill him, but he did anyway because Kratos just doesn't care. But my next one, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare.
I'm so glad that you have this on your list. Because spoilers for not just this episode but next week, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, the OG, right?
Yes, the OG.
Okay, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare did not make my list.
Okay.
And it pained me to do it, but I cannot have, I think I have two Call of Duties on my list total, and I can't have more than two. I just, as much as I love the Call of Duty franchise,
Yeah.
I'm just, I cannot be the Call of Duty guy who's like, oh yeah, I have three Call of Duties on my top 20 list. Like, come on, man. There's a limit here.
Hey, but no, it's fun. This is back when Call of Duty was like, you were excited for a new Call of Duty to come out.
Oh, it started it. I'm stealing your thunder again, but this started that whole,
the hype
train.
Don't
want to say the trend, but the popularity of Call of Duty. Like, this kick-started. Like, I'm not saying the earlier Call of Duties weren't great, they were, but Call of Duty 4 was the special game that brought it into the next generation.
Yeah, back in the day, Call of Duty 2, Call of Duty was PC, like, it was big on PC, but it was the whole Call of Duty versus Battlefield thing, and then it finally made the move to Xbox, and that's where I think a lot of people started really recognizing Call of Duty for consoles, and it was fun for them going back to the World Wars. But by the time we did get to Call of Duty 4, it was starting to hit that point to where, man, I'm so sick of World War II, I'm so sick of the World War. Can we do something different? Can we like move to a different era? Can we do something special? And it really does seem like Activision and the rest of the team. Gosh, I can't believe I said Sledgehammer. They did Modern Warfare 3.
Infinity Ward.
Yeah, Infinity Ward. They did Sledgehammer did 3. But Infinity Ward took that to heart and was like, let's do something fresh. And with the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 coming up, they delivered. Oh my goodness, people, you would never understand how hype we were with the new look of Call of Duty. Like, when they first showed, you couldn't even tell it was Call of Duty, because Call of Duty always had this blocky kind of look to it. You could tell what was Call of Duty because it lacked colors and it had a lot of brown and gray. It just looked like hell. It looked like war. And then you see these dark colors, rain soaked, where you just see these soldiers just soaked in rain, and you see the light of Captain Price's cigar, and it's like, oh my goodness, this looks so cool. What is this? This looks amazing. It looks so real. And then boots on the ground with this rocking ship, and the guns sounded way different from what they were in the past Call of Duty games. The AI was running around taking cover, and you were hearing your fellow soldiers calling out enemies, like, watch your left side. Here comes a container ready to crash. And that gameplay was just so amazing. And then Call of Duty Modern Warfare pops up. You're just like, bro, this is Call of Duty. Just like Taylor said, this revolutionized Call of Duty. It didn't do anything for first-person shooters, but it brought back the freshness of Call of Duty. It brought back the hype till you were like, bro, now other games have to match this. Like, the fluidity of the animation, the graphics, like, the game just looked absolutely, even now, the look of the game holds up. It looks absolutely beautiful. And the gameplay was just so fun because it felt so different from the past Call of Duty games that it felt fresh, and it revitalized a lot of fans to the Call of Duty franchise. And for me, it did that for me too, because I was getting kind of bored with Call of Duty. But Modern Warfare, bam, woke me right up. And I was like, yep, I'm back on the Call of Duty train.
To me, and this isn't a hot take, but to me, three franchises revolutionized the first-person shooter genre and brought it into, like I was saying earlier, the next generation. Call of Duty, Halo, and Battlefield. And I feel like I had to say that considering I left Halo 3 off my top 20. I love Halo 3. Don't get me wrong. It's just that I was never fully into Halo like my friends were, or like I guess the majority of people were. Like, I love Halo.
Planet.
It's just not story-wise, or it was never like fully my thing. I was honestly more into Gears than I was into Halo.
Okay.
In terms of...
Gears was fun. Gears was awesome.
Yeah, in terms of the Xbox exclusive kind of thing. But I can't knock what those three franchises, Call of Duty, Battlefield, and Halo, did for the first-person shooter genre. Because Battlefield was crushing it with the bad companies. Then we get... Or, don't want to say then we get, but we also get, around that same time, Halo 3... Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare. It was just a boom of amazing games.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, what can you really say about Modern Warfare, the OG? And I would, like, the reboot was good. I think they've completely screwed up the reboot franchise of Modern Warfare 3, but the OG Modern Warfare story's good. The multiplayer is awesome. The progression's great. It's just a very well-made game that, while probably isn't quality-wise the best in the franchise, it's the thing that is built upon. And I think you might hear the Modern Warfare franchise again here shortly. Speaking of awesome games, though, let me go through my 14 through 11. At number 14, I got a shocker here.
Okay.
Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, wow.
I did not expect this to make my top 20.
Oh,
but
man.
Every time I kept, like, because I had like a list of a lot of great games and I was trying to fill up my top 25 at the time. And I kept seeing Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. And it kept beating out other games. And I'm like, man, is it really? Yeah, it's just the story of Guardians of the Galaxy is so freaking good. It's funny. It's emotional. It's action-packed. The characters are great. They're great characterization of the Guardians, by the way. And you remember when the game was coming out. Everybody was making fun of it, going like, oh, yeah. What was it? I mean, hipster Star-Lord?
Oh my god, yeah, the way Star-Lord looked.
Dude, Star-Lord in this game is so, he's so good.
He's cool, yeah. But again, it was that Marvel's Avengers game ruined it.
It did. That is the reason this game is not remembered as well. And I think it's remembered pretty well. That's the sad part.
Oh, no, yeah, no. People like it. It's just one of those, even I was like, yeah, I came late to the game because it did come to Game Pass. But man, I still wish this game came out before Avengers.
Oh, yeah, it would have been completely different. This is one of those games, too, because of the way the Guardians are the way they are. They never stop talking. And in so many games, that is a huge flaw. That's the thing to make the game bad. It makes the game great here because the dialogue is good. Because the voice acting is great. Like, this game's story is what propels it to me. The gameplay is solid. I don't think it's anything to write home about. I really don't. The gameplay is pretty good overall. You're playing as Star-Lord the whole time, and you could control, like, hey, you want Rocket to do his ability here, and all that stuff. Like, that's fine. It's a serviceable to good gameplay experience. What makes this such a great game, and what propelled it to number, was it 14 for me, on my favorite games of all time, is, like I've been saying, its story, its characters. Number 13. I said it might come up again. It's come up again. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. The 2011 version. Or the 2010. Whichever one Modern Warfare 2 gets. The OG one. Alright. This game built on everything that Call of Duty 4 was and made it better. All that needs to be said. I mean, this is the, for people my age, mid-20s, mid to late 20s, you are looking at, like, hey, what was the main game you played? Modern Warfare 2 is probably it. Like, this was the multiplayer game to play. It's one of the best multiplayer experiences in history. Was it balanced? No. Not at all. Was it fun? Fuck yes it was. The nuke, the weapons, the perks. There's just something that, the combination of all these things, it was special.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, that was my dog.
Your dog agrees.
He loves
it. What does your dog have to say about Modern Warfare 2? I must know now.
Yeah. What's your thought, pup? No, he's sad at me because I didn't put it up on my list.
Yeah.
He's disappointed. He's disappointed in me. He agrees with you.
He should be. He should be very disappointed in you. Number 12.
Okay.
NFL Street 2.
Whoa, you're going way back.
I was. I was struggling between this or one of the best Maddens of all time. Like, you know, Madden 06, 07. But at the end of the day, I wanted to go with Street 2 because this is probably the best NFL arcade experience we've ever gotten. Like, this game is nostalgia infused. Like, that's all it is to me. Like, anytime I hear a song from its soundtrack, I think about NFL Street 2. This is one of those games that I could pick up and play immediately if you handed me a controller and put the game on. Like, I will remember everything about it. I can go through all the plays. I can go through all the players. Like, that's how much I played this game. It is one of the best sports games of all time. And lastly, but not least, I have The Last of Us at number 11. Barely squeaking out of my top 10. But I think that's more to do with, I think, Naughty Dog and their gameplay.
You know, Taylor, I was actually debating if I was going to put The Last of Us on there. Because you and I both like the show. We're casual fans of The Last of Us. At least I thought we were casual fans. But you seem to like it a bit more than I do. So I am kind of interested in why you would put this one on there, but not two.
You're trying to bait me. I know what you're doing. You're trying to bait me.
You. I'm wondering because we actually had a review of The Last of Us TV show, the first episode, and we both loved how much it captured the things that we loved about Last of Us 1 or Part 1. I'm really interested that you put this on your list. Like, yeah, we love the TV show, at least the first episode. But yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I looked at The Last of Us in my collection, and I debated. And honestly, I didn't even think you were gonna put it on yours.
I think it goes back to the theme of my list so far. You could look at Batman: Arkham Knight or God of War, or even Guardians of the Galaxy and the Resident Evil 2 remake. Like, I am somebody who, while I love gameplay, if you give me a great story, I'm in. So, while the gameplay of The Last of Us isn't necessarily the thing that I was most enticed by, its story made up for it in spades. Like, this is genuinely one of the best video game stories of all time. I in terms of quality of games, too, it'd be hard not to put this top five. I would say, for a lot of people, it's probably their number one. Actually, you start to think about it. So it just comes down to me in terms of when putting together a top 25 or a top 20 favorite. And I'm like, okay, the gameplay just, it isn't my cup of tea sometimes. Which is ironic considering there's another Naughty Dog game in my top 10. Its story makes up for it. Its characters make up for it. Joel and Ellie are the thing that, like, their dynamic brings me back to The Last of Us. Like, that's the lasting thing, no pun intended there, about the game. So, that's why it makes my list here. Not necessarily the gameplay of it, but more so, again, just the story and characters. A lot like it was for Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, Resident Evil 2, God of War, Arkham Knight, so on and so forth.
Okay, so you got a bit going on there. I can accept that. Not like I was going to disagree with you or anything.
Why don't you have Last of Us 2 on here? Like, we haven't talked about why we don't like Last of Us 2. And like, yeah. Just to quickly go and recap it here. Not to spoil it either, but I think Last of Us 2 is a story that thinks it's smarter than what it is. That sounded like really mean. But I'm trying not to spoil it.
No, I agree with you. It is one of those kind of Neil Druckmann having his head up his own rear, because people really did like The Last of Us, and he kind of went a bit too far from what I'm told about the story. I haven't played Last of Us 2. I was one of the people who got caught up in the spoilers of it. And even when I saw some reviews from a few people that I trust, they all said the same thing, that it drags on for way too long, and that you could easily shave off a few hours of the game if you just focus the story a bit more. And if there's one thing I dislike, is when you take a good story and just drag it out because you have to pad it out. I do not like padding. Yeah, I think with The Last of Us 2, now I'm over it, and I'd be like, okay, I'm willing to play it. But the idea that it is one of those pretentious kind of things really turns me off.
It's a harsh word, but it's kind of the way I personally feel about it myself. But I also give you are somebody, I'm not just trying to be on the fence either, but I do get if you're somebody who's like, no, I really like The Last of Us 2 story. I really like the way they go with it. And I'm trying to be very vague on purpose, because I'm not trying to spoil the dang thing for anybody who hasn't played it.
But yeah, same.
For me, it was one of those things that the first one was just this, it's a simple dynamic. I think it's the quality of what they're, it's not necessarily like, hey, we're putting together this very complex story that's trying to tell this message or something like that. It's just like, hey, it's a simple story, but the quality of work from the writing to the performances are on point, like 10 out of 10. So while I think the performances are 10 out of 10 in The Last of Us 2, I feel like the writing is so preoccupied with this larger theme that they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
over the story that they're telling to the point to where I feel like the story is not only told out of order in terms of satisfaction, but I also question just like, what's my point for even playing it? Because while you're telling a story, this is also a video game. Like, you want it to be fun. And I question whether or not The Last of Us 2 is fun. I don't question The Last of Us is fun, even though I have my issues with its gameplay.
All right.
So that would be my final thing on The Last of Us here, to talk about the whole franchise, I guess. You got anything else to say about my other three picks? NFL Street 2, Modern Warfare 2, the OG, or Guardians of the Galaxy?
No. Well, not for Modern Warfare 2, because I agree with you. My dog definitely agrees with you. he definitely put that on his pick. I do wonder, Streets, man, where did that come from? That came out of nowhere. Like, Streets, I'm thinking about SSX Tricky nostalgia. A few days ago. Man.
Pure nostalgia.
EA Big. That's fine. EA Big was awesome. And I do not understand why EA shut them down. They were one of the best developers that they had. And my heart sunk when I knew we were never getting another a new extreme sports games from them. So yeah, man, that was just that came out of nowhere for me. And now I kind of want to go back and play that. And NFL Blitz, because I've been seeing people show those videos. I'm like, God, we used to have alternative sports games that were fun.
I think another thing for me, just with NFL Street, and I think this could be the last thing we talk about, and then we can wrap up here. I think it helped me growing up learn more about the players, which is weird to say because it's not like the actual players. It's like not like I know their backstories or anything. But it's something like attaching a face to the name. Mm. Right? And it's something about being like, and this goes to Madden as well, like with draft classes and stuff, and me learning about the rules of football through Madden. And I always remember in Madden, like, I would do like drafts and franchises with my brothers. And we would have real draft classes. So it would be real players coming out of college. One of my favorite players as a kid was Darren Sproles, this little running back from a small college. So I found myself throughout my childhood rooting for Darren Sproles and his career because I loved him on Madden. Like, I drafted him and he was an awesome running back for me. Like, it's stuff like that. And I think Street was something else for me to where I would be like, oh yeah, this guy's one of my favorite players because I always pick him in NFL Street. He's awesome.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, so you have a really good reason to be attached to that franchise.
Yeah, it just helps with, I guess it helped me learn, with Madden, it helped me learn the rules of football more, and I guess the way the NFL works. With NFL Street, it made me more of a fan. That's the way I could put it.
Yeah.
But any final thoughts here on our 20 through 11?
No, I'm interested in seeing what else we got for our top 10. That's going to be the thing that I'm going to be interested in here.
That's when it gets serious.
Pretty. Yeah.
But, like right now, cool like, oh yeah, here. We can have our fun, like NFL Streets and hold on, I want to make sure I get your game right here. I'm sorry. Sudeki and John Woo present Stranglehold. Like, we can have all these games in our, you know, 20 through 11. But when we get to the top 10, we got to be coming in with some really solid reasonings and some really good picks. I can't wait to see what we got here.
I will admit, in my top 10 before we get out of here, I do have a couple that's pretty big on nostalgia for me. So I can't wait to get into that.
I'll go ahead and tease it here for next week's episode. My number 10, while it's a great game, it is the first game I ever completed. And it nostalgically is one of my favorite games of all time because of that.
Well, all right.
But let's go ahead and get out of here. Michael, this episode went a little bit longer than we anticipated.
We knew it. We knew it would.
Yeah, and you were like, we might be able to do all 20 in one episode. No, the hell we wouldn't. We talk too much. We like hearing our voices. This is what we're talking about. Yeah. What you're working on? Where can people find you?
I'm working on a couple of previews, and I'm also working on a review for Anomaly Collapse, which you can see pretty soon. Of course, I'll talk about that here. But you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/foxdaddy. That's FOXDADDY. Or you can find me on X/Twitter at M_MOSLEY_JR. What about you, Taylor? What are you working on, and where can we find you before you go on vacation?
You can find me in our Discord, link for which is in the description of this episode. As for what I'm working on, I'm just working on these podcasts, man. I am working on Power Up and Game, this podcast here, Nerds Top Movies, our movie/TV podcast, and the Long Box Hunters, a podcast hosted by Tristan Benz and Drew Garrison, known from Nerds Top Movies, as they talk about various comic book runs. And we might have a special episode of Long Box Hunters coming out pretty soon, so be on the lookout for that. Lastly, I want to say be sure to check out thenerdstash.com for all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and so much more. Whether it's lists, guides, opinion pieces, you name it, you can find it over on thenerdstash.com. I want to thank Michael for joining me. I want to thank anyone for listening in. We'll be back next week with part 2.